Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I have to advertise what I do through the lens of saving and budgeting, but what I really do and my passion is teaching women how to grow their money, how to take risk, how to invest. Because that's smashing the patriarchy. I mean, that is how you get power. And I say this as a person who has felt the feeling of having no power, being forced to do stuff I didn't want to do because of a lack of money.
I'm delighted to welcome back artist, mother, and tax expert Hannah Cole to the podcast today. Hannah is a tax expert who specializes in working with creative people and their businesses. Though she's worked at a couple buttoned-up tax firms in New York, she loves bringing her tax skills to the aid of the creative world. A longtime working artist with a high-level exhibition history, the financial challenges of freelancers and small creative businesses are both relevant and very personal to Hannah. Hannah currently lives in Asheville, North Carolina with her partner and two kids, and she's here to drop some wisdom for our community today, and I have some questions to ask Hannah specifically from our community, as well as a few I want to address surrounding money, shame, financial tips, and more for artists. Hannah, thank you so much for being here, and welcome back to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Thank you so much, Kaylin, for having me. I just love talking to your to other artist mothers. It's
yes.
The greatest.
I know. We're kind of the best, you know, if I do say so myself.
I agree.
So before we dig into financial and tax talk, why don't you just start by telling me a little bit more about your art practice and just sharing, you know, a bit about sort of, I don't know, why you feel like you as an artist are connected to this, you know, creative business and financial, like, what is the financial connection for you there?
Sure. There are so many. I mean, it's really my life's work. But basically, I think I knew I wanted to be an artist from, like, when I could hold a crayon, you know, as a kid. I just knew it was the thing I wanted to do. And I got many messages throughout my life, follow your dream, but also you'll never make money as an artist. So the contradictions began early. And ultimately, I think I became an artist ultimately when I realized if I didn't do what I loved, I was going to be a bitter person. I found that actually started happening to me when I started studying political science and realizing, you know what, this isn't the thing that I want to do. So I make work that is very much rooted, like, in my daily life. It's very authentic and kind of, I would say my artistic project is about finding beauty in everyday things, things that people don't consider beautiful or just see so often they just don't even notice. So it's just kind of taking exquisite, painstaking detail of things that people would overlook normally is what I find really fun and magical.
And you have a lot of, like, weeds and cracks in the sidewalk and, you know, imagery like that that you paint, right?
Very much. Yeah. So it's, it really comes from my daily walk, which is kind of a ritual I've had forever. And so it's just literally like what's under my feet as I'm walking. So it's often bits of pavement, manhole covers, things like that. And in New York City, where I lived for 8 years and had both of my babies, you know, that was a lot of gray.
Yeah.
Very, very neutral colors. And then the funny thing is, as soon as I moved to Asheville, the very most, like, stark difference was how much green there is here, even on the ground from, like, fallen leaves and things. And so after 8 years of living in New York, the very first art supply run I did in Asheville, I went out and bought, like, 20 different tubes of green paint.
I love that. Your palette, like, directly shifted after that geographical
move. Very
direct.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And do you work primarily in acrylic or oil?
That's another thing that was influenced by kiddos. I was trained as an oil painter and thought I'd be an oil painter my whole life. I love oil. It's beautiful. The smell makes me happy. But when I got pregnant, first I switched to acrylic, and my paintings, if you look at them, they're filled with layers, like layer upon layer upon layer. And the way I used to work in oil was I would just have, you know, 10 different paintings going at the same time, and I would wait a day for this layer to dry and work on another painting. When I switched to acrylic, which I did because of my pregnancy, I was like, oh my goodness, I can do this so much faster now. Mm-hmm. And also I think when I was training in my early days, you know, I'm in my 40s now, early 40s, my art school was very down on acrylics, like it was the ugly stepchild or something. But acrylic paint has gotten so good, you know, you can get gorgeous stuff. So yeah, I switched to acrylic then, and I really never looked back.
The levels of, you know, shaming in the art world can go. We can be shamed around money. We can be shamed around being a woman. We can be shamed for using acrylic paint. There's just, you know,
the minutia you can get into. I know. Really.
Cadmium over, you know, just there's so many random things that people want to make a fuss about.
Definitely true.
So make that connection for me between artist and financial, you know, like working in finance and taxes. Like, what did that come sort of after you pursued art, or, you know, was it more like parallel journey? Kind of to make that connection for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, as any artist knows, you develop all kinds of weird attitudes about money from art school and from just people at random dinner parties telling you what they think artists are, which is generally disorganized and terrible with money. And of course, those are not the people who know any artists. Those are people just working off of a stereotype. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just want to be really clear that my real life experience, I have yet to meet an artist who actually fulfills that stereotype, because you know, we really have to get our stuff together in order to function. So I just, and artists do so many hard things they don't credit themselves for. I just like highlighting that to people.
Yes.
But so I had all of those bad attitudes myself. You kind of choose the career you need, I think, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'll tell you something really personal. Like, when I first had a baby, I never was a woman who had like a whole plan for childcare or knew, you know, I had friends who had sort of planned it all out. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to handle maternity leave. And I don't know why that didn't occur to me. I didn't realize how hard it would be. My mom had been a doctor and had commanded some power in my parents' marriage, and she had had childcare and the help she needed. And I just assumed that would be the case for me. And then I had this unbelievable smack in the face moment where I realized, oh my goodness, I'm the lower earner. I'm gonna be forced into staying home. Mm. Like, I'm not gonna be able to do childcare because I'm not bringing enough income in to even clear the childcare bill. You know, like I, just on an economic level, we were living in New York City, which, you know, economic pressure galore. Pretty much was forced, not because my husband is a jerk, just like the economics dictated, well, he earns a high income and I do not, I'm going to have to stay at home. And I didn't want to. So that kind of utter lack of economic power, it dictated how my life went. And I was very unhappy. I mean, also I had a colicky baby and I didn't have my parents nearby or his, and I was all alone. And it was it was a tough time. Mm-hmm. So
I feel like sometimes that time, it's so tough, but I think a lot of women look back on it and see how transformative it was for them, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's kind of like COVID. Like, we, everything gets distilled down, you know, in a pandemic, and you're just like, I need to make some changes, you know?
So true. So true. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I had such a steep, I was home for 18 months alone with my daughter going crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously I love my daughter. Do I even need to say that?
No,
but
you
it was not the life I wanted to be living.
Yeah.
So, Then I had a second baby, and I realized babies can be fun. I didn't have that experience the first time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Anyway. So did you like go back to school, or what was your path then? You know, you had this realization, and then you're like, I want to, you know, pursue this like better grasp on financial empowerment for artists. Like, how did you then transition that into now you're full-time, you know?
Yeah.
But like, yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of different threads, and they all weave together into a braid. But I was having a very personal, disempowered economic experience. I was realizing how important that money was to just my having any power and decision making. I got a job as a project manager in an interactive design agency in New York City. And I had always thought having a day job would be the enemy of my art. And I found that to be almost the opposite of true. Mm. I actually loved just like being seen as a really talented worker, and like, you know, it was great. And I actually took that job thinking I would train to become a designer. I was thinking like, I need a more sustainable path. I need something that's going to have more guaranteed income. Mm-hmm. As much as I love art, you know, this sort of like, sometimes your show sells out and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes mm-hmm. you get the grant, sometimes you don't. That was like feeling pretty insecure once I had a child to support.
Right.
So this day job, I started realizing, oh, I actually really do like exercising this other part of my brain and just being an adult, you know. And then a couple things I learned at that job, I learned that the designers really weren't treated a whole lot better than artists, mm-hmm. you know, maybe one little notch above on the ladder, but barely. And simultaneously, I realized that as I did project management, the more I started doing like the bookkeeping for the company, the organizing, the legal contract review, all that sort of businessy stuff that the creative people really didn't want to spend their time on. Mm-hmm. The more I got raises and the more, and job title bumps. And like, I started seeing myself travel up the ladder really fast. And, you know, I'm good at that stuff. I mm-hmm. won't say I always love it, but I can do it. And so that was a big reveal to me. And then finally that company failed because of a lack of good accounting. Like they didn't know how much money they were making, and they really weren't making much. And ultimately they went under. So at that moment I was out of a job. So it was a real crystal moment where I was like, and then to just draw back on some other experience that had been simultaneous. Like I had had confusion about my taxes forever as an artist. Cause you know, we're independent contractors generally, you know, running our own businesses, and you have to do everything yourself, and yet you have so little help and you have no one who understands you. So anytime I hired an accountant to do my taxes, I just found that I paid a lot of money and got no guidance, and they didn't communicate at all. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have any idea what an artist's life looked like. And it was really infuriating experience to me. And I realized like, I had two residencies 1 year out west, and I looked up the tax rules. I diligently kept a journal of my mileage, like driving from the East Coast out to Wyoming and then again to New Mexico. This was like a $4,000 deduction. Mm. And the accountant I hired that year just didn't bother with it. They just missed it. And I was like, I did not get in my car and track my odometer by hand every single day for you to miss this. Mm-hmm. It just made me realize that I didn't rate, like I didn't rank as a serious person, as a real client to them. I was this little weirdo on the edge, and they weren't going to spend any time looking up artist case law for me or thinking through what a real artist deduction was. And I just realized like, I'm not going to get good accounting. Like even when I'm paying a full price, I'm not getting it. And I was so angry. So that experience combined with being out of a job made me think like, oh, you know what? I know the business I'm going to start.
Yeah. I feel like that's such a known story to me that like, you know, you find this like need that really comes from within. I mean, I've talked about this related to my own, calling to like start this podcast and community is that, you're creating what you want to see in the world, right? Because you're not feeling served by what exists there. So I love that.
Oh my goodness. And Kaylin, I cannot tell you enough how much what you do is amazing, because that sense of community, I mean, that is basically the other reason that I do what I do. Like, I love making art, but the secret magic of being an artist is getting to be among artists.
I know. It's so special.
It is so special. And we have to kind of stick together, because the world doesn't always see us for our value, but we do. And it's worth a lot.
I know.
Worth a lot.
I know. I love that so much. Thank you, Hannah. Okay. So tell me point blank, why do you think it's important for artists to have a good handle on their money? And what does a good handle, I feel like that's a term that people kind of throw around, but just, I want to hear you define what that means.
Sure. I have so many answers to this. It's good for your sanity, for your mental health, for your ability to have rest. The amount of headspace it takes up to be disorganized is massive. I don't think people realize that so much, but I see it every day in my practice. Once people get organized, they suddenly have these reserves of time they didn't realize they had never had before. It actually costs you time. I have had the experience of like people going through my money bootcamp program. It's like year-long education program that I run. And in the middle of the year, once they've kind of figured out how to get their books together and gotten a lot of the things organized, suddenly they'll do a huge website revamp or a huge new body of work. And I always notice it. And I'm like, hey, it looks like you have a little more time now. Mm-hmm. And they always are like, yeah, it's because I got my money together. That's a real thing. But then my second answer, and I will say this, like just as a mindset thing, women, we speak to our daughters differently about money than we speak to our sons. Mm. We say words to our daughters like save, be careful, budget. And to our sons, we say grow your wealth, invest, take risks. And one of those groups will grow wealth and the other will live in scarcity. We're teaching that to our children. Mm-hmm. And so I really do have a secret agenda to smash the patriarchy. And so...
a not so secret agenda.
Maybe I let the secret out.
It's not so secret between me and you, but between this community.
And just a couple of listeners.
Yeah.
But... I have to advertise what I do through the lens of saving and budgeting, but what I really do and my passion is teaching women how to grow their money, how to take risk, how to invest, because that's smashing the patriarchy.
Yes.
I mean, that is how you get power. And I say this as a person who has felt the feelings of having no power, being forced to do stuff I didn't want to do because of a lack of money.
I love that, Hannah. And I want to point people to episode 57, where you and Kitty Dinshaw and I had a good conversation on the business of art. And I think it was toward the end of that episode that we talk a lot about, money and how we are raising children to think about money. And like I remember you gave like some good tips for like talking to your kids about money and that kind of thing. So make sure, listeners, you go back to episode 57 if you haven't heard that yet, where I also talk with Hannah and Kitty Dinshaw. It was a good one.
Sweet. That was a great conversation.
It was. Hannah, why do you think so many artists and women artists in particular have issues associated with money? Like, I know we can, we've already nodded to like it being this patriarchal, like deeply rooted thing, but like, what are some of the issues that you see people struggling with, especially women artists?
I mean, I think a lot of what I've said just there, just that we're trained to kind of have this attitude about budgeting and preserving and say that we're not really taught how to handle. In fact, we're taught a narrative that says we're bad at money, even as women and also as artists. The fact is we're the financial decision makers in our households a lot of the time, most of the time. And, it's just not it's a false narrative, and it's a narrative that's meant to keep us out of power. So it's just good to sort of reflect on those meta messages. Plus, don't blame yourself if from the day you were born, your parents and the world was talking to you like in this certain mode, like you shouldn't be good at this. It's hard to get rid of those attitudes when they're lifelong. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. I think even for me, it's tied into this like, oh, creatives aren't good at math and like numbers, like even just down to feeling like I don't know what to do with or make decisions about my money because, you know, even simple accounting might like feel intimidating to me. Like, I feel like it's connected to that too. But I feel like so much of that is actually, it's not that simple accounting is actually difficult for me, but it's that I've been telling myself this narrative of like, well, I'm not a math person. So, you know, I need someone else to like calculate my expenses for me or whatever. Like, I don't know. I just feel even as simple as that, just that, you know, creatives aren't good at detail-oriented things and numbers is a detail-oriented world. So, you know.
So true. Yeah, it's so true. Not to mention there's an entire financial services industry really designed to teach, to tell you that you can't do it on your own, that you have to pay them a lot of money to do it. And you know that there's no one who starts investing who isn't like a little nervous, like, believe me, nobody, but it's totally learnable. It's a learnable skill for absolutely anyone. And there's no one who doesn't start from ground zero. So, you know, kind of,
Yeah. Well, good transition. 'Cause I want you to talk us through maybe some steps artists can take at the beginning, or, and I say the beginning, but I know that you probably believe this as much as I do, that even if you're 20 years into your career, you can still start now, right? to get your finances organized. So like, what are some initial steps to like, you know, just kind of step into that empowerment to better understand your finances and to, you know, just kind of get yourself rolling with this more organized, empowered outlook on your art as a business?
Yeah. It's funny. I've just been working on this framework to kind of map out what the steps are in this process. So I'm just fresh off of this. I think the very first step is belief. Like, you have to kind of, you have to recognize that you've been taught a stereotype about artists and then also stereotypes about women that are counterproductive to you. And so you have to kind of look those in the face and say, no, I reject you. And to me, really, that's step one, because you just cannot do it if you're telling yourself a story that says you can't. So really think that's the beginning.
Yeah, the mindset.
But then, absolutely. But then beyond that, there's, you know, one is just starting to kind of understand how taxes work and how, you know, when, for example, with your freelance income, you know, with your art practice, art practices in general are a freelance business or a sole proprietorship. Just understanding like a basic fact such as that all the profit you report on your freelance taxes is subject to self-employment tax, which is 15.3%, and that you will have to pay that regardless of if you make very little money or a lot of money. And so, and that that is on top of your income tax rate. So a lot of people don't know that sort of basic fact. That's actually sort of the number one big mistake I see artists make, is not factoring in self-employment tax. And so just knowing a thing like that, that basic understanding helps you realize, oh, so if I track my expenses, which is actually sort of optional, because you're not required by law to take all your deductions. You can leave money on the table. The IRS is fine with that. But if you track them, then you're not just saving on income tax, you're saving self-employment tax. So it's like actually understanding how powerful it is to track your books, that it saves you more money kind of than you realized, which is the corollary to you're paying more taxes than you probably realized.
Right.
So I think that's a really good step one, that basic like understanding of self-employment tax. And then and getting your bookkeeping started, that's a really big one.
Yeah. Tell me about some basics with bookkeeping. Like sure. What's the bare minimum an artist should be doing in relation to like organizing, you know, their bookkeeping?
Sure. So the bare minimum is you have to track your income. That's legally required. There's no getting around that. You must track your income because you have to report it and pay taxes on it. Expenses are optional. But you do that for you. You do that so you pay less.
in tax. And so just tracking income, tracking expenses, when you have those two numbers tracked, you get the knowledge of a third number, which is the difference between them. You know, mm-hmm. your income minus your expenses is your profit. A lot of businesses, and it's not just artist businesses, a lot of businesses in the US, including the one that I lost my job from, don't know how much money they're making. And so just that is real power, like knowing what your profitability is. Mm-hmm. And I know there are probably people listening to this like, I don't want to know.
Yeah, but if you don't know, you can't move forward, right?
It's exactly right. I don't want to reinforce the sort of like diet culture thing here, but it's a lot like getting on a scale if you're trying to like do stuff about your weight. Like it can be just really awful and painful, or maybe just taking your heart rate if you're trying to get in shape. Maybe that's a healthier analogy. But it's like, can be really painful to see the status quo where you are right now. But when you start to measure it and actually look at it, just the habit of looking at it every week will do a lot, because you change things you're looking at. You know, you tend to work on the stuff you see. So if it remains invisible to you, it can go, you know, deep in the wrong direction. I say this as a person who lost my job because the company didn't know what its profit was.
And what are some tools that you recommend artists use to kind of at least track, you know, those three numbers that you talked about?
So you can actually do it really simply. You don't even necessarily need bookkeeping software. Now, software exists and it's great because you can run reports and you can do things that are automated. So especially if you're operating at a level where you're having lots of transactions, you're going to get to a point where you need software. So it's not like everyone can use a spreadsheet, but a sort of simple business, the kind, like the level of business I had when my kids were super little, they're not that big now, they're 6 and 10, but, you know, like I wasn't having 6 shows a year when my kids were 3.
Right.
You can use a spreadsheet for that and literally just track what's the income that I make and what's the expenses that I have. And one of the simplest ways to make that easy is to keep a separate bank account for your art stuff. That's really the best thing you can do. No matter how you keep your books.
I love that. And I was learning from another artist, Jamie Smith, who runs the Thrive community, and she did a art business thing through their network last year that I kind of hopped on for a few weeks. And I loved this way that Jamie was talking about, really she was talking about knowing your expenses and knowing, you know, kind of your profit, I guess, or like your comfort, kind of just talking around like comfort with numbers and stuff. But she pitched it as like, you should know your survive number. So like, what does it cost you each month to be an artist? Because I know so many artists who don't even know that. And it's like, then how can you price your work? How can you, you know, like even if you just track your expenses and you know, okay, each month, you know, on average, I have my studio rent, I have my materials expenses, I have my, I don't know, my later.com account, like, you know, all of those like business related things that are kind of going into your art career. If you can't at least know the number that you need to make each month to basically be an artist, like how much is it costing you a month to be an artist? How can you kind of make any projections and like move forward, you know, and expect to like properly price your work or, and so then she kind of compared it to your Thrive number. So like, you know, this is the number, I know it's so good. Like that language is so great around it. But so your Survive number is just like, if you make this much, you're gonna, you know, at least even out. But then what is your number that helps you feel like you're thriving? So like say your survive number is $500 a month and that'll cover all your expenses. Your thrive number is like maybe $1,000 a month that you want to make because, you know, profit. Because it's like, oh, with $1,000 a month, I can have all my expenses covered, but then I'm not feeling shame every time I want to, like, you know, buy an extra art supply or take myself out to dinner to celebrate whatever, an accomplishment, or meet clients for coffee and not feel stressed about, like, the bill, you know, just kind of think, or, like, put away money for going on a trip to New York once a year to see great art, you know, just kind of thinking through that language and just those very basic, like those very basic knowledge points for your finances.
They're so, so wonderful. I love that framing.
I know.
I'll say another, like another, if you're just new to bookkeeping, like don't be intimidated by this. This is a next level thing. But like once you have bookkeeping set up, if you start tracking like this kind of work versus this kind of work, or this gallery versus that gallery that I work with. And you start seeing which ones are making money for you and which ones are not, which ones are worth it and which ones are not. Just imagine learning that the gallery that is doesn't treat you well and is really annoying to work with is also not making you any money. How liberating is that? How liberating is that to know? And like, and to fuel your energy into the places, like to actually be able to look at your numbers and say, oh, that project that I felt so passionate about, that sold better. What was happening in that that made that sell better? And like kind of doubling down on your tactics. That's really, it's a really cool and empowering thing to see.
I even think about that in relation to my offerings, like my art, like what I'm selling. Like if I know, you know, in 2020, if I know every painting or piece of art that I sold and like what, you know, what that income was from it, even just understanding like, oh, I actually do sell more big paintings than I realized. Like maybe I should put more energy into like even just projecting sort of what you want to offer and what you make. I feel like without that knowledge of like tracking it and understanding sort of what sells and what you can be expected to make from certain things, like my Studio Scraps work sell for this much, but they don't take very much time. So like, you know, like just kind of you can strategize, you know, and and sort of lean into that more intentional and purposeful way to like run your business. I feel like it's so empowering to have that knowledge.
Absolutely. And I want to make a note too, like I'm fully aware we do not all do this entirely for the money. Like that's one of kind of the magical and wonderful things about art. And not to shame anyone for doing it for the money, because I hope you do. I want you to make a lot of money. Like, that's important. But you can do passion projects. You can do things that are just because it's a community engagement and you, it makes your heart sing. I'm all for that. It's just nice to see, like, how much that costs you and how much you want to make from other sources to support it. So this isn't to, like, throw out all the low-profit things. You can, if you are a widget manufacturer and you didn't care at all about the thing you were putting into the world, sure, you would operate absolutely with that as the only factor. We operate with other things as factors. Like maybe for you, you're in real time scarcity because you have teeny tiny children who take a lot of your physical energy. So like, you know, maybe for you, the studio scraps, if that takes you a lot less time and you can kind of do it in a more efficient way, maybe that feels really good to focus on selling those for the years when your kids are really little, you know,
exactly.
And then you move. We're not saying you have to stay stuck in one zone for your whole entire life.
No, I love that. And I think that's such an important point that everyone does approach this differently and people have different motivations, you know, for money and the way they use it with their art career. People are also, I mean, we know lots of artists who they have expendable income. And so, you know, that's great that they want to just use that to make art. And, you know, like maybe they have that from a spousal support or, you know, something else. And so just their motivations might be different. But
absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to make, Hannah, that of course, we're not advocating for any one, you know, way of prioritizing these things. But just, I still think, even if you are just, you know, have expendable income and it doesn't really matter what you spend on your art career, I still think knowing is empowering, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, you know, for a lot of us, time is the more scarce resource. Mm-hmm. And so definitely tracking that, I hate tracking time. I'm not going to lie to you, but like, I mean, I will tell you that when I'm doing tax returns, that's really hard work. It takes a ton of focus. I cannot have my children in the room, so mm-hmm. I have to have a babysitter if I'm doing it. And so that's like a very not profitable part of my tax practice. Whereas when I'm teaching, I feel connected mm-hmm. to who I'm talking to. I'm engaging with my artist brain and community, and I love it. Mm-hmm. I just love it. So it's not just about the money I make from those two activities. I'm now talking about my tax practice, right, which is on top of my artistic practice. But like, there's a huge difference between those activities, and I want to be working in my zone of genius as much as I can. And to me, that's teaching, you know? Mm. So it's like, the factor is not just money. It's like, how much inspiration and just life satisfaction do I feel from doing this activity?
Yes, definitely.
How much time does it take me? Yeah. Can I do it with the kids in the room or not?
Yeah. Yeah. And just approaching all of these things with intention, right? Like, how we spend our days is how we spend our lives. That's one of my favorite Annie Dillard quotes. And I think about it all mm-hmm. the time. But how we mm-hmm. spend our money is how we spend our lives too, in a lot of ways, right?
it's absolutely true.
Or it shows the things we value.
Definitely.
I'm delighted to share that this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast is sponsored by an artist mother and tax expert, Hannah Cole of Sunlight Tax. Is your creative practice gaining steam? Maybe you just got a big grant or a big show. You're excited to get to work, but a nagging feeling tells you that there are some tax issues that could hurt you. What you don't know might actually be holding you back from all that you can accomplish. You just want to get down to the studio and do the work you love, but finances and tax concerns are dragging you down. Thankfully, Sunlight Tax is here for you. Artist and tax pro Hannah Cole started Sunlight Tax to empower creative people with the tax and money tools you need so you can have more money, more time, and make a bigger impact with your work. Who doesn't want that? Sunlight Tax offers an annual membership called Money Bootcamp, which is tailored to your busy creative life to teach you targeted skills for your financial health and taxes. Hannah guides you through the pitfalls into simple systems so you can stay on track, start investing in yourself, and get back to the studio without getting bogged down. Right now, listeners of the Artist Mother Podcast can get a free artist tax deduction guide by going to sunlighttax.com/artistmother. That's sunlighttax.com/artistmother. Thank you, Hannah, for providing so much to artists and helping us through with all of our financial concerns. It's so reassuring to have experts like you we can trust and we know are looking out for us. Head to sunlighttax.com to find out more about everything Hannah has to offer, and don't forget your free artist tax deduction guide just for our community at sunlighttax.com/artistmother. Okay, Hannah, talk to me about business licenses. Do you recommend artists get a business license? I know we're going to get into, like, there's differences within states for some of this, so we can just talk mm-hmm. more generally. But could you walk me through the pros and cons of, like, the different options that are out there, a DBA, LLC, S-Corp? Like, could you speak mm-hmm. to some of those things that artists might be wondering about?
Sure. Yeah. I think it's important to note that there are different roles for different types of organization and entity and registration. So there's sort of accounting stuff, and there's also legal stuff and like regulation stuff. So, for example, you might have local based rules about registering your business. The best thing to do there is just Google it. Hey, I live in the city of Boston. Does the city of Boston require that I register my business? That's a Googleable question. Mm. And so you just find out if they do. And if they do, then you register it. That's pretty cut and dried because it's just a requirement legally. So I just recommend that everybody Google that and then do what your local law says you need to do. Mm-hmm. There's also registering to collect sales tax. That's a slightly different thing, but related. That is saying to your state, hello, I exist, I'm a business, and I should be collecting sales tax. Of course, a lot of people will hear this and think, what if I don't register and I don't want to deal with that stuff? Mm-hmm. But of course, I only have one answer for you, which is you should do it the legal way. But that, you know, so that's another factor, registering to collect sales tax. I mean, I personally only work through gallery. I only sell artwork through galleries. So I don't have a sales tax obligation personally. It's on my galleries to do that. And I have to tell you how much I love that. Mm-hmm. But if you, you know, if you're selling direct, then you very likely do have to register with your state and locality for sales tax. Mm-hmm. And understand that sales tax, there's, I was just telling you this the other day, there's almost 10,000 different sales tax jurisdictions in the US. So your rules are different from my rules. And just because you got it right for your state doesn't mean you got it right for your county. So you have to check all the layers. So state, county, city. So you want to just see if you need to be registered and if you need to be collecting sales tax.
Okay.
Then there is stuff about, well, let me talk about the LLC. This one is mega confusing for people. An LLC is a legal entity. And really the point of an LLC, I see a lot of people just file for an LLC knee-jerk without really understanding why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So the why is it's a liability protection. So if you care about that, that's why you should get it. It's not a tax thing. In fact, an LLC is actually called by the IRS a disregarded entity. And that is because the IRS literally disregards it. It has no bearing on your taxes.
Hmm.
And people don't realize that. But what an LLC does is it is a legal, it creates a legal veil, a legal separation between your personal self and your business. So Kaylin, the human being, is one thing. And then if you form an LLC, so if you didn't have an LLC and you had an open studio event and somebody tripped on a light or something in your studio and broke their arm and sued you, then without an LLC, that person can sue you, Kaylin, for everything, your business assets and your personal assets. And I'm sorry, I hope I'm not terrifying you now.
No. I am aware of this, that's the, you know, the DBA, you know, it's kind of, you're taking, like, you could lose your house if something goes wrong, essentially.
That's the issue. So most people, your biggest assets are personal, not business. I mean, if you just, to use myself as an example, and probably most listeners will be similar to this, if you were to sue my business, my art business, what could you get? You could get a computer. That's probably the most valuable thing.
Mm-hmm.
You could get some nice lights. You could get a lot of crusty oil paint tubes.
Mm-hmm.
You could get some random canvas. There's just not a lot, you know, some tables that I made myself out of plywood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a lot of assets. Like, I wouldn't love it. I'm not asking to be sued, but on the personal level, I have a 401k, I have a SEP IRA, I have a college fund for my children, I have a house, I have a car.
Mm.
Those are personal assets. That's a lot more in there, right? So forming an LLC, what that does is it separates the two, separates your person from your business.
Okay.
So now Kaylin artist business is separate from Kaylin human being. So now somebody comes to that event.
It has no tax or financial implications. Like, nothing is necessarily different. It's just the legal protection.
Exactly. It's just the legal protection.
Okay.
Although I will tell you, the one accounting piece of that is, it is critical that you separate your bank account. You cannot mingle together personal and business expenses. Once you have an LLC, this is always good practice.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have an LLC, you can actually invalidate your protection by mixing together business and personal accounts.
Wow.
So you do not want to do that. It is so important. You need bookkeeping. If you have an LLC, you need bookkeeping and you need a separate business bank account. That is like a non-negotiable.
Mm. Good to know.
I got my stern voice on there, but that's kind of a warning to people.
Like,
because there are examples in there's legal precedent where they can do this thing called piercing the corporate veil. They can actually, if you were in that terrifying lawsuit, they could subpoena your bank records. They could see you make a bunch of clothing, daycare, and grocery purchases out of your business bank account and say, oh, Kaylin, your art business is not separate from your personal life. Look at all these personal expenses. Actually, there is no separation.
Mm.
Therefore, we can come through the LLC and sue and get your kid's college fund.
Mm.
So
interesting.
maybe I scared some people into some better accounting right there.
Yeah, definitely. yes, that's really interesting. And just like considering kind of the, you know, the pros and cons of those two different things. And then what about S corps? Mm-hmm.
Sure. So an S corp, that is a tax thing. So that is basically a tax formation that saves you money on self-employment tax.
Okay.
I also see people at times do an S corp too quickly. I don't think the day you start your artist practice, you should go out and form an S corp. Once you form an S corp, you're stuck with it for 5 years, no matter if you lose money or not.
Okay.
So the point of it is, when you form an S corp, basically you have to run payroll. So you actually set up payroll, file with your state for like a payroll withholding number, and you withhold your Social Security, Medicare, state unemployment, all workers' comp, all that stuff that your state requires. And you pay yourself a salary. So you pay yourself a salary. You actually get a pay stub that shows your Medicare and Social Security withholding, like that whole thing,
mm-hmm.
before people get too intimidated. Like, I have done that. You can use Gusto. It's a great software that does it pretty easily.
Okay.
But so you pay yourself a salary, and you do pay Social Security and Medicare on your salary.
Okay.
So you don't avoid, there's no tax savings on that salary part. However, whatever income you make over and above your salary, that is just profit to your business. So yes, it's subject to income tax, but it's not also subject to self-employment tax.
Okay.
So basically, if you pay yourself a salary of $40,000 per year,
and how do you determine what's an appropriate, like, can't people then pay, oh, I'm going to pay myself $20,000, but they know they're going to make $60,000? Like, how do they gauge that?
The IRS is on that. They're all over that. So that if you pick a salary, actually, in the art world, we're not in a bad position for this, because the salary comparisons in the art world are pretty lousy. So you can pick a pretty low salary. You have to pick a reasonable salary. And I will tell you, the most common audit that happens over S corps is reasonable compensation.
Right.
So be careful. Do not pay yourself $10 a year and think that that's going to pass muster. But yeah, you basically just want to like look around at job boards and find some job descriptions and find some proof, document that there are other people with similar roles being paid that salary that you're paying yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of serves as your proof that it was a reasonable salary.
Hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. There's some things to know though with an S corp, like you also have to file a corporate return mm-hmm. with a March 15th due date. And that costs you some money. And then running payroll costs you some money. So there are costs to it. And if you're not making, you know, $50,000 a year consistently in profit, probably you're not ready for it yet. You should wait till your profit is high enough and consistent. Because otherwise you'll be spending money on a corporate return and on running payroll, and you won't actually be saving the self-employment tax. You'd just be incurring new fees.
Okay.
So don't recommend it if your art income is $10,000.
Okay. That's a good point to make. And we can totally take this off the episode, but I'm just curious, like, if you're willing to share the way you've broken down Sunlight Tax and then your own business, like, what are your, because I'm just thinking, like, of people like me who, like, you have, you know, I have Artist Mother Podcast as a business, and then I have... Mm-hmm. you know, my personal art business where I sell paintings. And like, do you have a specific recommendation for those different things? Like, I know there's a lot of artists out there who maybe have their hand in like another business, creative business that they run. Again, we can take this off the episode, but just curious to hear you talk a little bit about that breakdown.
Sure.
Or like, and what you would recommend, you know?
Yeah. Are you asking me about like how to structure it or how to like, I'm not sure what the question is.
I guess like how to structure it and then like what business license is more appropriate for, like, I just feel like you and I have similarities in the way that, you know, you have kind of this business that you're doing where you have like people working for you, but then you have your own painting practice. And so I'm just wondering kind of how you keep those separate if you do.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I'm happy to answer that. So, I mean, basically the IRS rules are pretty clear. If you have businesses that are, you can have multiple Schedule Cs on your tax form. You can have multiple businesses. They don't have to get combined into one. If they're really separate.
But they could be, right? If they were, could be. If it was a DBA, especially, it would be like, this is the way Hannah makes money.
Yeah, it could be. So to use myself as an example, a tax practice and an art practice, those are distinct businesses. Like there's not really a gray zone there. That those are definitely two separate things. And so I have two separate businesses. And I, you know, actually I have an LLC for one and not for the other. I file a Schedule C for one and an S corp return for the other. So, you know, like I treat them absolutely independently. They're totally different. I will say, like, on the art side, and again, to use myself for an example, like I often will have multiple income streams, especially before I formed a tax company. But so I would have teaching income, maybe commissions, maybe open studios, maybe sales through this gallery. I often would do art writing. So I'd have like writing income, occasional like curatorial income. So those are a lot of different threads, but fundamentally they all come down to my art practice. And so I put them all together on a single Schedule C as my art practice. And that is, for most people, that is easier, more tax advantageous. But you just have to make sure they are truly related. Are you drawing from the same skill set, the same set of tools?
What about me?
I mean, Kaylin, I think we could make arguments that yours are connected because you're fostering an arts community.
I know, but it's like confusing because, like, business wise, they're separate. I don't know. Clearly, I'm being very vulnerable in sharing. I haven't really figured this out yet because I didn't really intend or like expect to, you know, turn the podcast into this whole like generative thing. And I don't know, like I'm still kind of like, is this all just me being an artist or is this a separate business? And like, what does that feel like when I make those distinctions and what is better accounting wise? I don't know.
I mean, that's a really tough one. I mean, I know you've done, for example, like some juried shows and things like that. Like that's kind of wishy-washy in between, you know, you could call that a part of the artist mother world, or you could call it a part of your independent arts practice. So you definitely do have a little bit of a complicated, I wouldn't say I think that there's a totally right answer there. I think I would look to like, what's worth tracking independently? What do you, you know, when you have a show for Artist Mother, is that fundamentally a product of Artist Mother? Or is it really just independently part of you, Kaylin, your work as an artist?
Yeah, I mean, I track my painting sales and stuff independently and my painting expenses. But again, some of it, there's crossover. So it's just weird, you know, like my computer, for example, or QuickBooks. Like I use my QuickBooks software for both. And I don't know, there's just, it's hard to exactly toe the line, which is why I haven't. But I think mentally, I like sort of the compartmentalization of it. I think that helps me for spending time on the different things, for like boundaries, like personal boundaries. But then, you know, I don't know. they're still so combined. So, and I know there's lots of artists, you know, who maybe have a gallery or, you know, who might have similar things beyond just art writing or juring for shows or something, that it does feel like, is this a separate business or not? I don't know.
Yeah, I have a lot of clients in that boat. And I would say it's a pretty individual conversation every time. I wouldn't say that it's super cut and dried. I can't just say to your audience, like, do this one thing.
Right, of course.
Because it's really going to depend on the circumstances and how enmeshed the things are. And then there's a decision, too. What do you want? You know what I mean? Like, if it works for you to keep them separate, there's no punishment for having them separated, for filing two different Schedule Cs, and that's fine. The only punishment is admin.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't call admin punishment.
Yeah.
I'm like a natural tornado who has taught myself to be organized. So
It's work for me. Okay. So now I want to ask some questions that came in from our audience. Like more specifically, like they're, I think, looking for a very specific answer from you. A few of these things we might've talked about a little bit, but I just want to have you address them again, just for the sake of like, you know, making sure the person gets the answer they want. So
for sure.
How do you determine if your professional art practice is a business that you can expense or a hobby that you cannot in the eyes of the IRS? Is it something that if you don't have consistent growth, or do you have a change in practice methods, like a business model year to year, that you would have to keep track of what years it counts as a business and what years it doesn't?
Mm-hmm. So I will say the IRS is very clear. The difference between a hobby and a business is profit motive. Mm-hmm. That is the one and only. Now they have a 9-point list that they actually use to determine profit motive. And if you have one, and, you can look up that list too. In fact, Kaylin, I can make it available to your readers, to your listeners, if you want.
That'd be great.
It's a public document. It's part of the IRS, like, audit manual for artists, but, it's kind of funny knowing that exists, but it mm-hmm. does. but basically, for one thing, I will tell you something that no other accountant is going to really like have a lot of awareness of, because I read the case law about artists. Artists have successfully proven that they have a profit motive and therefore a business subject mm-hmm. to being able to take losses and expenses when they've had losses for 20 years running. Now, okay. Is it a pleasant experience to defend yourself? No, it is not. It can be hell. But you can do it, and it is your legal right, and I want artists to know what their rights are. So, you know, proving your profit motive is like, what can you document that shows you're trying to make money? You mm-hmm. know, correspondence with people in a position to pay you or to sell your work, grant applications. Advertising is huge. And also documenting all the stuff you do that you don't enjoy doing, because hobbyists don't do the stuff that they don't enjoy. Mm-hmm. So pretty much everything you hate doing is proof that you're running a business. So your calendar is actually a huge piece of proof in a hobby loss audit, because it shows all that stuff that the IRS isn't aware of. The IRS knows about your studio time, and they know about everything that looks fun and glamorous. Mm-hmm. They don't know about how much you sweat over posting on social media, how much time you spend going to openings and networking, how much time you travel for site visits or to meet up with collectors, do bookkeeping, frankly, do professional development to learn about things like taxes. All the stuff you do like that is proof that you're running a business. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those things are important. And artists, frankly, are in a bit of a tricky zone. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I want to say it's all good, but you can be audited when you have multiple years of losses, because it is a legitimate question for the IRS to ask, why are you running a business that continues to have losses? Do you have a profit motive?
Right.
And you can be audited over that. And actually, it's important to know the distinction. An audit is not an accusation. It's a checkup. Mm-hmm. So you can be audited over that issue and prove your case and win.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's good to know,
a lot of people would rather not have to prove their case. They'd rather just show a profit.
Right. Of course.
Certainly making money is always safer, because it's very easy to prove a profit motive when you're making a profit.
Okay. And then this is a great follow-up question. I've heard that 3 years of reported business loss rather than profit is a red, quote unquote, red flag that is likely to trigger an audit. Is this true? Are there other red flags that artists might commonly experience? And can I, or should I, change year to year how much of my art-related business expenses I actually claim in order to stay in the black? For instance, claiming a portion rather than all of my studio rent on a low income year?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So yes, there is a rule called the hobby loss rule that this is an allusion to. The hobby loss rule is not cut and dried. It's a guideline. And what it means is a presumption. So if you have a profit in 3 out of the last five tax years, including the current one, then you are presumed by the IRS to have a profit motive, i.e. a business. And so therefore that your things are legitimate. Doesn't mean you can't be audited, because you still can.
Mm-hmm.
But if they audit you, the burden of proof is on them. They mm-hmm. have to prove you don't have a profit motive. Now, if your losses go the other way, if you don't have a profit in 3 out of 5 years, but you go the other direction, then the burden of proof shifts. Now you are presumed to be a hobby, and you have to actively prove that you are a business. Mm-hmm. Now, again, there's case law that shows that artists have successfully done this, but your documentation has to be very, very buttoned up. You have to be doing a great job at tracking everything, and it's difficult, and it might be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a sort of trade-off there. Mm-hmm. And yes, you are not legally required to take every expense that you're entitled to take. And so if you want to sacrifice some in a year where you have lower profit, that is an absolutely legitimate strategy.
Hmm. Good to know. Yeah. Okay. And another question, is it correct to group all of your profits and expenses from various creative endeavors under one Schedule C or tax ID number? You kind of already addressed this. I make most mm-hmm. money as contract labor, but I spend some of my money making my own art. I group those things with random private art tutoring, profits, expenses, etc., sale of work, and subletting my studio to offset rent.
Hmm. That's a little bit of a talk to your accountant situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be able to give that person specific advice without really looking into their specifics. But it's generally to your advantage to combine them. And so if you can, if you have legitimate cause to, then you would typically want to. But I would just make sure those activities are truly related and like mm-hmm. truly groupable under one thing. Yeah.
Okay. I love this question. Do you really need to keep all of your receipts? I have heard that your credit card statement can be enough if your purchases are not large and are recorded in a log of what charge was for what category of expense.
This is a great question. So I will tell you, the law says receipts.
Mm.
And the law does not say credit card statements. If you were in an audit with a very grumpy IRS person, and that is possible, they could throw mm-hmm. out your credit card statements because you didn't have receipts and say, doesn't matter, you don't have receipts. That's the letter of the law.
Mm.
So I will warn you, there's no world I'm going to tell you don't need receipts.
Mm.
However, you don't have to sort your receipts. I have a trick that I teach, that I like to teach people, which is, first of all, you can scan them. You can keep them digitally and throw out the paper one. That's okay. So long as you can reproduce it on paper, if the need arose,
mm-hmm.
you only need a receipt in an audit situation. So you never need a receipt for your bookkeeping. You never need a receipt for doing your taxes. And in fact, I don't recommend those receipts as a basis for either of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But you just want to store it. You basically store it in a file for that tax year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you happen to get audited for that year, you'd pull it out. And then you would need to actually go through them.
Okay.
So they serve you as proof for an audit, but they're, you know, what you do want to do your bookkeeping is based on having a separate business account where everything going in and coming out is art related. And then you use that bank register mm-hmm. to do your bookkeeping. Do not do your bookkeeping from receipts. You'll go crazy.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Especially now. I mean, it's one thing 20 years ago or later, but yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, digital receipts are still receipts. So you buy art supplies on an online store, the digital confirmation email, that is your receipt. And you also need to save that. So be aware, you should have an email file where you file by year all your receipts as well.
Okay. Good to know. Okay, we'll wrap up, Hannah, by talking about just if you have any specific financial or tax thoughts for artist mothers. So not just artists in generals or artists in generals, but is there anything specific to artist mothers that we should be aware of or that you feel like would be especially useful for us to know?
Sure. I will say that this year, there is a family leave credit that is available not just for people who are employed, but it's also available for self-employed people. And it's quite big. I do a whole like walkthrough of how to do the calculation on my Instagram if you want to follow me there at mm-hmm. Sunlight Tax. But that family leave credit gives you up to 50 days of paid leave based on your self-employment income. And I will show you how to do the, like, the calculation for that. Mm-hmm. But it's a huge amount of money. I will tell you, I did the calculation for myself and I'm getting a $10,000 credit.
Oh my gosh.
So it's a lot of money.
That's amazing.
So if your kiddos, like mine, have been out of school for a year or even, you know, half a year or whatever, you might be entitled to that family leave credit. So that's a big one. Mm. I wouldn't skip that. There's also a sick leave credit if you had to quarantine for a COVID scare or you had COVID as well.
So those are homeschooling parents.
Not for people who, you know, deliberately on purpose and want to be homeschooling. Only for the unwilling.
Right. The unwilling homeschoolers.
Only for the ones where the school closed and you didn't get a choice.
Okay, that makes sense. So good to know. Like, oh my gosh, people, get on that knowledge. Head to Hannah's Instagram.
It is a big, big credit. It's the post where I'm wearing a blue jumpsuit. Just look for the blue.
Good to know. Okay, awesome, Hannah. And why don't you, before we do our final five, as the way I always close our interviews, why don't you just tell us a little bit about what services you offer through Sunlight Tax?
Sure. So as you probably figured out, I only serve artists. So that's definitely the deal. But I run a program that's a year-long program called Money Bootcamp. And it is an education and empowerment program that kind of brings you through this framework from mindset to understanding to organization to planning to maximizing your tax savings, and then all the way up to, you know, smashing the patriarchy by investing and growing your wealth. So that is a program I'm really proud of. I developed it over many, many years of being an artist, doing artist taxes, seeing where everybody makes the same mistake. So it's based on that.
And I'm currently enrolled, so excited to keep plugging away at that. Yeah, thanks, Hannah.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Awesome. And then, you know, you give so much great free advice on your Instagram too. I feel like that's your other main outlet, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love doing it. I love the people who follow me and ask me questions. And I just, you know, the secret superpower of being an artist is the artist community. So I just always welcome people in my orbit who just want to, like, I've learned so many skills from other artists teaching their superpower. So I give back in that same way. And I just love showing artists, you know, the family leave credit,
right?
We can get or things like that. So yeah, definitely. So happy to give a lot of, you know, free information just for the general arts community. Yeah.
So important. Thank you, Hannah. Okay. Five final questions to close the interview just for us to get to know you a little bit better. Okay.
Awesome.
Okay. Who's your biggest art crush?
That is such a hard question.
I know.
I can't pick one. I will tell you, I actually finally bought a piece, bought a real artwork. I saved my pennies and bought a piece by Mark Joshua Epstein. They're these like lumpy abstract shaped canvases. So at the moment I'm really feeling that.
That's awesome. And I love know, that you used, you know, that you're supporting other artists by growing your collection. It's like, that's kind of one of the things I, you know, have been talking about in the professional practice course that we're teaching is celebrating when you hit goals. Like, you know, so often we focus on, you know, creating the goal and like strategizing around the goal, but then we don't actually put a plan in place for celebrating the goal when we hit it, or even celebrating milestones like to the goal. Like, I made it halfway to my goal. Yay. How am I going to treat myself? So I was just sharing that buying other people's art is like one of the biggest things that I do, you know, for myself when I hit like a big goal.
So. I love that. It is so important. I'm the worst defender on that lack of celebration. I tend to hit a goal and be like, what's my next goal?
Oh, me too. And, I am so bad.
I've been training myself to do rewards and it's so gratifying. Mm-hmm. And artwork that you have been stalking and loving that you finally get to put on your wall and like live with and tell your friends about and like, connect with the artist, it feels so good.
It does feel so good. And yeah, I just feel like that stopping and really, you know, understanding and letting it soak in, like what we're actually accomplishing, is so needed.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So true.
Okay. What's your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Such a nice one. I had to cancel a trip where I was going to bring my daughters to France and Italy for the first time because of COVID. So I'm really longing to reinstate that trip. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope you get to do that.
Thank you.
Soon.
Me too.
I mean, or, you know, driving the next state over is also very appealing right now, right?
Oh, I'll take any. At this point, a trip to the gas station is exciting for me.
Yes. Yes. Is our library open again? Can we go to the library? I know. No. I know. Okay. What film or book has inspired you greatly?
Sure. Nelson Mandela's autobiography is my maybe favorite book of all time. He is, to me, he's such a superhero because he had every cause in the world to be angry and bitter and unhelpful and spiteful. And what he chose was empathy. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you know, I mean, he was in jail for 17 years and he still got shit done. Mm-hmm. I mean, I find him so inspiring. Mm-hmm. And reading his autobiography and seeing how even in prison, he didn't give up and he used community to keep him going and, you know, like organize for better food in the prison and mm-hmm. better treatment of the Black prisoners who had it worse than the white prisoners. Mm-hmm. To me, he is just the ultimate example of the human capacity for empathy.
Mm, so great example.
I love him.
Yeah, yeah. Love that. Good recommendation. Thanks, Hannah. What's your favorite meal?
Ooh. okay. Guilty vegetarian confession. I'm a vegetarian. Our whole family are vegetarian, but we do it really for like environmental, like sustainability reasons. So, just about once a year on a birthday or an anniversary, we will get like a beautiful farm raised piece of steak.
How can you do that? Like, I've been a vegetarian for 12 years and I feel like I would be so sick. It doesn't affect you?
I don't know. Apparently not. I don't know. The pleasure overrides it. I don't know what it is.
That's so funny. I just kind of always thought, you know, that I don't know. Like if I would, I mean, not like I ate a bite of chicken accidentally or something, but just like if I sat down and ate a whole steak,
if you had a whole steak.
I felt like I would be really sick. Hmm.
I haven't been. This works okay for me. So yeah. I have a once a year steak and I relish it in a way that is, you know, I suck the marrow out of it in a very literal way.
You become very carnivorous in that moment. Yeah.
It's like my one. But I will say that I feel like an appreciation and a gratitude for the animal and the farmer in a way that before I was a vegetarian, I did not sort of connect with.
So, definitely. Yeah. I understand that fully because that's the sustainability piece is the reason that we want vegetarian too. So I get that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love that, Hannah. My guilty pleasure as a vegetarian who doesn't eat meat is if we go to the coast, we'll have seafood like once in a while, you know, like only when it's like, oh, it's a fresh catch or whatever. And that never doesn't usually bother my stomach. There's been a few times, I think it's more the psychology of it. Like I get like weirded out. Like I'm like, I'm eating an animal. I don't know. You just kind of get out of the mindset of it, you know, and I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know. I don't claim any knowledge of that science.
Okay. I always like to offer last but not least a space for you to give a shout out to somebody who supports you in your work.
I'm going to shout out to my art best friend, Rachel Hellman, also an artist mother. Rachel and I went to graduate school together and we get together and do an annual trip in the pre-COVID days. We would do we'd go to the art fairs and we just talk about, you know, we share contacts and resources and stuff. But we also just like talk through strategy with our galleries and we set goals together. And, you know, it's evolved as we've had children and life, and it's evolved into moral support, spiritual support, all sorts of things. So she's an amazing painter. She's an amazing supporter of me and my work. And I just love her. I love her so much.
I love that. So, I'm so glad you have Rachel.
Yeah, yeah, I am too.
Okay, Hannah, where can people find more about you and your work? What's your Instagram and website?
Sure. My Instagram is at Sunlight Tax. My website is also at Sunlight Tax, or sorry, sunlighttax.com. Mm-hmm. And you can link to my artist website through my Sunlight Tax website. So that's hannahcole.net. But if you just go to Sunlight Tax, everything is there. Okay. You can link to that too.
Wonderful. Thank you. And I just wanted to mention too, for our network members, we're going to be having a Q&A in the month of March with Hannah, which we'll be posting about, where if you have additional questions that have come up based on our conversation here, you can ask those to Hannah because she'll be live with us for about an hour. And we'll be publishing the date for that soon. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Hannah. This was really great. I think talking about money is something a lot of artists don't like to do, but I really believe that it can be so empowering once you start to, you know, kind of pull together like some knowledge and just feel more informed. I just feel like it's so much about like information and using that information for your own growth. So thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so, so much for having me, Kaylin. I love what you are doing with your community. So
thanks, Hannah.
I'm happy to share in it.
Thanks.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.